bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the British Tech Network. This is the big show, and we're here to discuss the week's technology with a fantastic panel. It's minus one because organisation's not a real brill thing for us, really. No. And the big man was on holiday, and he should have had holiday, and he still organised guests, but communication. We're only a world apart. Like the plug. We've got a great panel, though, even so. There's only the four of us, so it should be an erudite conversation, and we may actually finish on time. Yes. Joining me, top left, Mr. John Hume. How's it going, mate?
Not too good today. I'm not very happy.
First visit back for a couple of weeks, and you have axes to grind.
I have many things to say, and I will be trying very hard not to swear.
Would they be about previously nationalised institutions that no longer function correctly?
They are, yes. In fact, I like to think of it more as a cartel. But yeah, it's not... I'm not happy today. I should have incredibly fast internet right now and be speaking to you with crystal clear audio and amazing video, but sadly I'm still on TalkTalk and BT did not come today.
That is a song, I think. Daddy didn't come here anymore or whatever it was. But
it saddened me.
Next to him is the bloke who's rushed back from Knightsbridge. Austin Powers himself-ish. Alex Fox, how you doing, pal?
Well, I really was Austin Powers tonight. Lots of people outside around Harrods asking me to take pictures.
Passers-by, or?
Well, I did get some general passers-by into them because some of the sort of grumpy-looking old men that I had to take, these important people, they looked slightly less grumpy when I found some really attractive women walking past and asked them if they minded standing in the back of the shop. And everyone cheered up.
Jolly good.
And the gallery, I don't know, I think I managed to empty the gallery because once I got all the pretty girls outside, no one stayed in the gallery anymore, so
summer, it'll be interesting. Summer in London must be pretty good at the moment.
Do you know what?
You didn't concentrate much, did you?
I think the word "my eyes are on stalks" is quite apt. See, at the moment.
Our final guest, Eric Lanigan, doesn't get any of this because he lives in a place where everyone walks around in jeans and shorts all the time anyway.
But that's true.
It's a big thing here about this. We've had an unveiling this week, if you like, mate, in Britain. The female population has unveiled themselves to the male population.
Oh, okay. So what is your weather like now?
Oh, mate, I am sweating my guts out in this room. I'm in a studio with lights on, with electrical equipment on, and John Hume has kind of summed it up right there, looking like Johnny, what's his name? Oh, bugger, I forgot. I used to know the bloke who did his voice. So, mate,
these are my Top Gear shades. I'm ready.
Top Gear. How are you doing, Mr. Lanigan?
Good. I shorted Facebook stock, and so I'm now a billionaire. No, that didn't happen.
No, that really didn't happen. The week in tech, it's been a fun week. There's been an awful lot to talk about. There's an awful lot to take the piss out of as well, actually. Yahoo gave us a cutting-edge new browser, Axis, which was stunning and dandy and fine, and then they realised they'd given us a cutting-edge security exploit in it as well. So don't download it. Don't use it just yet. It needs a patch before you can get hold of it. Kind of like a quilt, really, that's gone wrong. Mark Zuckerberg got married, and his wife's not the only thing that's been going down this week. His stock hasn't done particularly well either. I've got a quick graphic representation of the stock. There we go.
I was glad it's that and not his wife.
It's now it's now 32 quid. It started at 38. It peaked at 45. So if you got rid of your stock about 20 minutes into the IPO, then you're laughing. You're absolutely laughing. But now you're down to 32. And there's investigations pending, apparently, as to why it was such a crock of crap. I don't think you're going to come out with anything tangible there other than the fact that someone said it was worth something that it wasn't, and the journalist went, oh, it is, it's lovely, and then everyone went, no, they haven't got any bricks and mortar, mate, they can't be. And Google have said that you don't need porn filters, you need parent filters, because the problem is the parents not knowing what the kids are doing, and what they should be able to do is be a bit more clued up about how to control access to their router and all that kind of stuff. And Jenikowski, the man who was Mr. Net Neutrality not 2 years ago, has suddenly become, you should throttle. Yeah, absolutely, you should make sure that there's tiered billing and all that kind of stuff. I really don't think you should let the net be free. And he's in a bit of trouble for it. And Obama has said that the government has to be for the people every time, everywhere. So any government department will have to produce web pages that are available on every possible device that could be out there that people may want to view them on. Well done, Obama. And the video for Rick Rolling's gone. The video, the one that everyone sent you to that played when you'd been Rickrolled, has been taken down due to a copyright infringement that someone's finally noticed. It's only taken 5 years.
So that wasn't the official one after all this time?
No, it wasn't the official video. It was one that someone had copied so that when you click the link, it went to the Rickrolling video. Wow. Rather than the real one put out by Stock Aitken Waterman. And it's gone. It's gone, 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 gone.
So they see, I thought they like remapped that page to go to like the official upload version as provided by the record label, but I guess not.
No, not at all.
Ah.
Apparently it went to a ripped off version and someone finally noticed. I can't believe that they've taken that long.
It was Rick Astley. He's just been calling YouTube, just trying to get a number just all this time, trying to get through.
Yeah, I'm making millions. Stop it. Stop it. Where should we start then, fellas? I mean, is there anything that's kind of really grabbed you this week that we need to have a good discussion about? I mean, Facebook's share price. I mean, we're not really particularly knowledgeable about stocks and shares, I don't think. But, I mean, I did say there was a dot-com bubble that was coming on Monday morning, and lo and behold. Sorry, Alex, go ahead, mate.
I was going to say, anyone that bought them has just lowered their tax liability.
Because it's coming off their stock price. Okay. I bought at 30. There's going to be a T-shirt. I bought at 38. I'm going to get that made with a British Tech logo on it saying, I bought at $38.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to mention any particular bank because I'm pretty sure I've got it right, but I can't be bothered to be sued. But a day before, a certain major US bank decided to tell everyone that it was really well worth the launch price plus a little bit extra. So if anyone's to blame, a certain very large US bank is certainly to blame. I think they were basically saying all these major investors like the pension funds and all these sort of people should get on board. It turned out that they might not be right. But, this is what's happened is we're so used to anything being launched and it going through the roof. So what happened? This got launched. The whole world aren't as stupid as they were a year ago, other than the banks, obviously, because they said it was great. And people have bought it, and then if they've got any sense, they'll sit on it. And when people, realise that it hasn't fallen through the floor, it will make its money back. Whether it was worth it in the first place is completely debatable. But, Zuckerberg's wife is now, if she divorces him, going to get a lot more than she would have last week. So that's probably why she's.
Well,
that's
only if he's sold his stock, though.
Well, no, but she still gets a percentage of it. So if she now divorces him, so she made sure she said yes after he actually became wealthy.
We don't actually think, by the way, that his wife has only married him for his money.
Oh, well, you might not.
Ugly redheaded dorks can get good looking women. It's okay.
He's got a really nice car as well, I think.
Ah, there you go, you see.
Oh, that's it.
In terms of the stock price, they were...
Oh, sorry, we digress.
They were valued at 65 times what they earn in a year. Now, by comparison, Apple is valued by stock market price at 12 times what they earn in a year, Google at 10 times what they earn in a year. Mm-hmm. If you ask me if Apple and Google are going to be around in 10 or 12 years from now and will have made more in a year than they more each year than they are now, I would say yes, that's true. If Facebook was still here in 65 years or we're still making gargantuanly many times what it's making now in the near future, I would have said, as I have been since this whole roadshow leading up to the IPO, that is completely mispriced. And so, yeah, I think it did what a lot of people like me said was crazily overvalued. And then the market reflected that.
I mean, the one thing that we said more than a year ago on this show was, if you're saying that this thing's worth $100 billion, I mean, we were talking about this when this thing was valued at $50 billion. And in a year, it's gone up by $50 billion dollars to 100. I don't think so. But we were saying when it was 50 billion, hang on, if you've got half a billion people who are members, that means you've got to sell about £400 worth of advertising that's got an ROI on it for each of the people that you've got as a member in order to make that 50 billion back in 3 years. Never. Never in a month of Sundays.
There's that worry as well, I think, for everybody that what happens if the MySpace thing happens all over again, something new comes along and everyone just drops it.
Exactly.
It's not like Apple or Google where you invest into a whole ecosystem. You have physical products that work with it, that everyone, people identify with the brand and they want to be part of it. Most people don't really like Facebook very much to start with. They use it because everybody else is there. And I think if someone came along that had maybe a bit more of an ethical approach that people actually enjoyed using and wanted to be a part of, then you could easily see what happened with MySpace happening again and it just becoming a ghost town. So I think surely that's got to play on the minds of people that are considering investing.
DT in the chat room saying it's gone from 100 billion to 30 billion. Well, I don't know if he says it's gone down to $30 because he didn't put the BN after it, but it's not that much, is it? I mean, it's only dropped $6 on original share price, so it's not.
Yeah, no, if anything, it's closer to $30, not 30 billion.
it does make you think that they need to reinvent Monopoly because of there's not enough money on the Monopoly board anymore.
Yeah. What you mean you can't buy real estate for $28?
No, well, yeah, exactly. But in Monopoly, when we were all kids, we used to go, "Oh, I wish this was real money." And now you look at this sort of the figures they're talking about. I don't want that to be real money. That's pocket change. I want real money to be in the billions now. I mean, the fact is,
they can just add a B at the end. Yeah, just exactly. Add a B at the end of every denomination.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, people. The world of finance, as it is at the moment, people are sort of going, well, where the hell do I put my money? Because for the last 10 years, people have said, oh, put it in put it in Asia, put it in here, put it in there, put it in there. And everywhere they've put their money has just gone belly up. And so this is like, well, look, we've all heard of Facebook. Let's just pile our money in there. Because of this, if Apple did a new launch, a new share issue, I don't know if they can, then the whole world would chuck their money in Apple. But the next best thing is the only thing people think they understand is Facebook is big and popular, so let's throw our money in there because of where the hell do we put it? We can't put it in, it used to be money's, it's as safe as banks. Well, that's gone. In America, you can't put it into property because that's gone. All that's left is this fictional idea that Facebook will make you money one day, so let's just pile everything we got into it, which is exactly why we got in this mess in the first place. So I don't want to blame anyone, and I don't want to say everyone deserves what they get when they pour money into something they don't understand. But I, for one, can't afford to bail anyone else out, so I hope they know what they're doing.
Isn't the issue here, though, that actually what we're talking about is a misrepresentation of what stock and share is about? Because, let's be brutal in the terminology. You are investing in an organization when you buy shares. You are taking money and you are riding with them, for better or for worse, for the purposes of making back on your investment of putting money into their share stock. Now, if it goes up, you make money. If it goes down, you lose money. But if you don't sell it, it's all virtual. It doesn't make any difference. And you're holding it for the long term. If you ever do seriously think about reinvesting it or taking it out. So, it stands to reason that a share stock is going to go down, and $6 on a $30 share is a fair proportion, but it's not something that you couldn't suggest they may recover over a period of time when they've demonstrated more that they believe it. It was an ambitious price, but I don't understand why it went to 42. Or 45 rather. I can't understand how it went up that much.
Probably because that was the original. I think what happened was the people who got in on the IPO, like the JP Morgan and the big backers, like Alex was saying, they sold it off to the pension funds and the people who they convinced to buy it at that high price, and then it plummeted. Now, of course, they were the ones who profited were the ones who drove the price up to begin with. It wasn't even just Facebook saying, oh, we think we're worth this much. It was those guys going out and saying, hey, they're really worth this much, and we'll vouch for that. So put in your money and get in this IPO, lock in your price right now. And then it just tanked, but so they got their profits.
Does the serendipity not miss anyone here?
Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, does the serendipity not miss on anyone here? Because JP Morgan's accused of scuttling the Titanic. So there's something that sank in 1912 and now it's Facebook.
I mean, like I say, I'm not going to mention any banks, even though everyone's been mentioning them. But what if you can say, okay, well, we think this is worth 45 and it's coming in at 36 and we've got a bucket load. I really nearly swore that. And we've got a bucket load of shares at 36 and we tell everyone it's worth 45 and then it goes up to 45 and we drop them all. We've just made back all that money we lost 2 weeks ago, whoever that bank may be.
Well, true. But you don't need to worry about swearing, mate.
Well, yeah, I have my own personal issue with trying to keep clean. So.
No, I've got my green counter running. See?
Oh, okay.
I can
punch. You have what?
I can punch greeny. We've had a guy called Andy Vaughan, who's fixter.net, and he's made an application that when you have your podcast running, you start a timer, and if anyone swears, there's a picture of Will Green here from the British Mac Show, who's always swearing on the Mac Show, and you punch him in the face, and every time you punch him in the face, it logs the time that he swore. So then all you got to do is at the end of it, go to the time codes, and there's a complete list of time codes when someone swore. On the
Should
back.
We test it?
It works. No, it works. Please don't test it. But it's a brilliant application. It's free. It's our app. It's the British Tech Network app. Thanks to Andy. And there is also, this is a hot off the press, there is also going to be an in-app purchase, which is going to be 99 pence. And it's Will has recorded a load of noises. So it's Will doing noises of him being punched in the face and punched in the stomach. And you can buy it for 99 pence, but every penny of the in-app purchase goes to the NSPCC. So,
that's good.
And that's Will's choice. Will's chosen the NSPCC. So it's not out yet. It'll be another month before you get the in-app purchases. But when you do, please go and download the Green Counter. It's free. So, you know, just put in Green Counter into iTunes and download it right now and just punch Will Green in the face every time you feel like it. Who cares whether he swears or not? If you've got it running, you've got to have it linked to a power source, otherwise it just kills your battery. Didn't have it running last week. Oops. What were we talking about?
Something to do with Facebook.
Okay, Facebook, they put out the a new mobile app that has photos, but it has Instagram-like filters, but is actually not based on Instagram. They apparently developed it before they ever even bought Instagram, because technically that hasn't even gone through yet.
Yeah, righto. Yeah, we all believe that, don't we? So, I mean, is this thing actually any good?
Well, it's just been out for about an hour and a half. I couldn't tell you.
Well, you mean you haven't downloaded it? Foxy, you've got every camera that was ever made the minute after it was made.
I don't use Instagram, and I only ever use Facebook under absolute duress and pain of being murdered by the people that keep in touch with me by Facebook. So I'm probably not the best person to ask about this. But it does make you think, well, a company that's not worth what it thought it was worth a week ago spent £1 billion on something that everybody said it wasn't worth. And then this is made by a company that they'd previously bought, which makes you think, what's going on with Instagram? I did read it earlier, but another company that makes this piece of software they bought previously to Instagram. So this has always been in the pipeline. This isn't something they've just come up with because they bought Instagram. So it all I can think of is, isn't the takeover Instagram isn't ready, and they needed something to come to the marketplace with after the debacle of the flotation to say, look, this is the beginning of us trying to monetize Facebook and give you some of that money back. So we're going to take over, you know, we're going to have an app. This is all the beginning of making this really, really tight walled garden around Facebook. This is the only thing I can come up with. It's probably nonsense, but it's the best I can think of.
Could well be. Could well be. Eric, your point was that you think that they bought Instagram to avoid being sued over this application if they really did generate it beforehand. Or was that you, John, said that?
I said that in the run-up. It's one possibility. If they
that's a lot of money to avoid a suit that's probably going to be worth about $10 million at the most.
What I'd heard it discussed was that they're after the community more. So that what their right. initial purchase was to actually get people that make good content rather than just necessarily the filters, because the filters are nothing, are they, really? There's some work involved in doing that, but that's not the clever bit of the app. The clever bit is Instagram developing this sort of community of people that are taking a bit of pride in what photos they're taking.
Wait a minute, do you mean that Desaturate, Blur, and Solarize are not worth $1 billion?
Well, it may be hard to believe, but I think, they've proved it themselves, haven't they, by creating their own app in no time at all. So it's certainly interesting, and what they end up doing with them, I'm sure, is going to anger loads of people, because everything Facebook does angers loads of people. So they're on a lose whatever, I think.
Mm. It's a scary thought. You used the word community, and if you think before Facebook, you had Facebook, you had MySpace, you had a few strange things around before that. But before, if you wanted to take a community as such, this is the words you used, and quite rightly so, you'd have to be like a missionary or something. You'd have to go to some lost tribe in somewhere and convert the entire community.
I was just thinking, or you'd have to be like the British Empire during colonialize.
That's my point. Is this a new empire building? Because how many people used Facebook? How many used Instagram? It's like, okay, for $1 billion, we are going to take that community. I mean, it would have been so much easier just to go and buy the colonies rather than having to,
Well, we did. Invade,
treat them appallingly and murder half.
We did.
Them.
We gave them glass beads.
Well, I suppose. We got rid of America when it was still worth something.
They came at us with sharpened fruit. We gave them glass beads. It was a fair trade.
It just strikes me as a really... It is. This is the new empire building, and you do it via buying communities on virtual networks.
It's a really, really interesting analogy, and I think it goes hand in hand with the sort of point of view, which is the poor people that think that you are Facebook's customer rather than their product. I feel sad for them in their quaint little world. We are the product, and if you can... if you think of it in that way, they've just bought a whole new load of product to add to their roster that they can then sell to advertisers. That's the other side of the coin. Maybe they want to influence people, but then more than likely they just want all of our details. So
we're going to end up with Facebook fanatics. We're going to end up with almost like Facebook terrorism. Because if you think about it, we look at anything else and we call it indoctrination. You take the needy or people that aren't so educated, and then you give them a doctrine, whether it be political or religious or something, and then you turn them into what you want them to do for you. So are we saying that social networks, forget, we won't say Facebook because I don't think they are the only ones, but are we saying that social networks are indoctrinizing people in the same way as politics and religion did in the old days to people that didn't have the education or the ability to find their own way?
I think that's a bit harsh.
There's a lot of people on Facebook that could do with a bit more education.
Well, look, I'm not saying it. Is it an attempt? Is it the same sort of thing? We can take power over these people by offering them something, and possibly you can't necessarily blame the world. I mean, in the old days, you had an enemy and you blamed whatever went wrong in your own country on your enemy, and therefore everyone hated the enemy, so you were the good guy. Maybe... social networking is the modern equivalent of the same thing. You take control of people by controlling their life and offering them things. Here you go, take a picture. You can show all your friends the picture via our network. Aren't we nice? At the same time, feeding them a diet of what you want them to eat to benefit yourself in the best way.
I think you've got to be careful, because I think if you, in the position that we're in, we sit and hypothesize about what tech companies are and what they're going to be and what we want them to be. And actually look at the vast number of people that are associated with those tech companies, whether it's a social network or whether it's a product. And those people aren't thinking the way that we are. And the tech company is not trying to think the way we are. The tech company is trying to think the way they are. And I think there's a demographic split. So it's not just, a demographic A's, B's and C1, C2, like you get from professional through to manual labour. There's an age split as well as that come through that. And you look at how do we use Facebook? So, I'm 45. Alex, you're 42, 43. John, you're
27.
You're 27. And Eric, you're 25?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's an enormous demographic split there. How do you use Facebook? Because mine is catching up with old school chums and a few people that I've got across the other side of the world. And it's a mini email system that's got a few pictures on it, effectively. I mean, if my email system sent a picture through each time they sent me an email more readily, I probably wouldn't use Facebook at all. But I've got girls that I know down at the rugby club, and they'll be there after a match. They'll all be in jeans and sweaters because it's been cold outside. And they'll suddenly say, well, are we going out tonight? And they'll give them and go, I don't know. And the other one will say, I'll tell you what, I'll Facebook you. And they don't send each other a text and say, are we going out later? They send a Facebook message, are we going out later? It's as ready as a communication system for them as a text would be for me. So that initially says I'm a dinosaur in the way that I communicate. So, I mean, how do you guys use Facebook? Are you using it the way that the community uses it, or are you using it the way that the manufacturer wants to use it, or are you using it the way that you use it, and actually you're not representative?
No, but I think it's getting people in the first place. I mean, I'm sure Eric won't know what I mean, but you had like Lord Haw Haw in the Second World War, who was a Brit that gave out radio messages on behalf of Germany from Germany. And I'm not accusing Facebook by any chance. I really am not. But I'm just sort of saying social networks are building themselves to such a part of a certain part of society. They're building themselves to such a level of importance. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, you've got professors now doing studies on the actual people's obsession with social networks. The fact that they can't go to bed, they can't sleep, they can't do this. They've basically got to be on their phone 24 hours a day, being in connection with things that just basically aren't important. And once you've got a level, you've got a part of society so hooked on one thing, it does worry me where the eventual control of this comes from. I mean, at the moment, you talk about something like Twitter. I notice there's more and more of these promoted tweets coming up. Now, they are adverts. I don't care what they call them. They are advertising. Now, Facebook, you know, oh, we're going to give you what you want because we're going to look at the type of things you're interested in. That's great for you and myself and you other two guys. I mean, you may be younger, but I'm sure you can tell the difference between when you've been fed a diet of adverts and when, you know, things are just popping up and you could ignore them. There's a certain percentage of people out there that are being... I honestly think are lambs to the slaughter, and I think we've only just seen the beginning of it.
Mm. Eric? Well,
I think I kind of see what Alex is saying. I don't really see where you're going about the political agenda or making the big metaphor like you are, but I think what is clear is that Facebook came into being because they said, we're going to be MySpace, but private and just for college students. Now, once everyone got into that, they said, well, let's open up to high school students. And then they did that. And they said, well, there's a big potential here. People like this product. So let's open up our customer base even more. And it became completely public. Actually, first it was regional, then it was by company or by city. And then it just went, boom, everybody. Just make up a name. We don't care. Just come into Facebook. So once they got people there, and that turned people off, right? Because originally the draw for Facebook was the extreme privacy control and the fact that only you and your friends could see what you're posting, not your teachers, your professors, your future employers. Mm. And then that totally changed, right? So then there was a backlash of privacy. So how does Facebook prevent not being the next MySpace, not being the next AOL or GeoCities? It's by locking people in. So how do you lock them in? You have every way to communicate funneled through Facebook, which is exactly what they've done with their universal messaging service. You give them an @facebook.com email address. You tell them email is obsolete. Funnel everything through Facebook. They did an emotionally packed advertisement about that wouldn't you like to see your grandparents' love letters, you know, as preserved through Facebook for all of time. Like,
hell no.
Going to be there in 150 years. That's what they said in the ad. That's what they said. So store your whole personal history in Facebook. So at the top, I absolutely believe that at the very top amongst Zuckerberg and the real strategists up there, they really are worried about this literally locking people in to prevent a mass exodus to a competing service.
Hmm. Or people just stopping using it. Plain
or to go to Twitter or to something that doesn't yet exist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Twitter, by the way, that's an important point, I think. Twitter, people, you know, Twitter and Facebook, their directions converged, right? But they started off being two very different things. Twitter initially was, or still is, it's a public broadcasting tool for little bits of a intentionally public thing. Facebook had started out intentionally private. And then the two have really kind of intersected in the way that Twitter now lets you post photos and all the things that Facebook was doing also. And Facebook encourages, you know, your posts to be public by default. So yeah, they're a little bit worried about each other, but also things that might come to unseat Facebook. It'd be less likely to unseat Facebook if you've got all your messages, photos, and instant messages and emails going through there.
The chat room has been going on wildly while we've been sat in the background making stuff up. DT in the chat room said, I've put all my money into British Network Bash tickets. The Bash is happening on the 6th of July. If you haven't booked it yet, please do. You can get tickets through going to our site, britishtechnetwork.com, and there's a banner on there that you click. Click on that, it'll take you through to Eventbrite, who are doing the ticket allocations for us. Your ticket is £20 to get in, and £1.85 booking fee that they take. We have got Andy Anatko coming, so he'll be there for sure, and we'll be having a load of fun. There's a guy called Paul Kirkle, the iPad artist. He has done three beautiful, beautiful drawings that are posters associated with the Bash. There's one of the Queen, there's one of a dog, and there's one of me dressed as Magneto, but that's a difference. That's you'll see when you get it. And he's going to be finishing those off, and me, Andy, and Paul will be signing those and giving them away on the day. So it's well worth coming along. Please book your ticket. Definitely 6th of July. You've only got a month to go. There's only 100 tickets, so we've only got I think we've got about half of them left. So
I like the slogan. Read the slogan out loud. I was going to, but it's off the screen.
Well, go on. What was that?
Oh, it was like beer, food, beer, podcast, food, beer, or something. What was it?
Beer, food, beer, fun, podcast, beer. That's it. Which is kind of the running order of the day. I mean, it starts at 11, so I mean, that's well over the yard. I mean, you should be drinking by then. We've done too much on Facebook, not doing it anymore. Had enough. Fed up with that. Julius Jenikowski has said that he reckons there should be limitations on capped broadband, and there should also be tiered structures for payment for your service. So you use more, you pay more. Now, this was a guy that was talking about net neutrality not 2 years ago. So, Eric, do you want to start us off? Because there's a certain element of this that sounds a bit U-turnish, and there's, you know, the picky people would be going, well, no, he said net neutrality, which is about censorship, not about unlimited broadband.
That's right. I thought Jenikowski, when he was appointed by Obama, was going to be, you know, the guy that fixed all everything that was wrong. I thought he actually believed the things he was saying.
And you think he's an asshole now, don't you?
I do, exactly. He completely 100% caved on net neutrality and came out in complete opposite support of that. He said, well, okay, well, here, I think literally this, I think this explains all you need to know, actually. These two statistics. The guy he replaced, Powell, Colin Powell's son, what's his name? Something Powell. Colin Powell's son was the head of the FCC. As soon as he retired, or his term was up, went on to become CEO of Comcast and chief lobbyer to the FCC. Another FCC commissioner that just approved the huge historic merger between Comcast, the America's biggest cable company, and NBC Universal, which is not just all of NBC's television properties, but all of Universal Studios movies and all the things that in their catalog and their big studios. So Comcast merged NBC Universal. That got approved against a huge public outcry. One of the commissioners who was the most outspoken that we should approve that and got that passed and approved, went on to lobby within months for Comcast and NBC Universal. So basically, I think Jenikowski is one of the many people in Congress right now, not in an elected position, but still there nonetheless, is using his position as merely a stepping stone to a cushy lobbying job upon his retirement from the government agency.
So, I mean, this does sound like a real climb down in terms of you know, has he been bought out by the Comcast crew et al, or is because in my mind when I read the story, I was instantly vitriolic and a bit pissed off about the net neutrality thing and what he was pushing for at the start compared to what he is now. He seems to have caved very badly, but then there's bits of me thinking, well, he's got a defensible position, and I didn't know it was defensible because he's a bit of a tosser, or whether he's defensible because it's genuinely defensible. I mean,
what was the position?
Well, his position seems to be, the position he currently has is to talk about the fact that you should be paying based on the number of bits that you download, is what I saw. And you could be capped, or you should be paying for that by the amount that you download. The more you download, the more you pay, because the greater the bandwidth that you're consuming. Which
right,
you know,
but the reason
is a bit of a bull argument, but go on.
Well, the reason that that's sort of, yeah, it's so bad, it's hard even to, you assume that the middle ground must be what he really thinks or must be right, but they're so far to the wrong end on this. What they should be doing is getting some actual competition in with the broadband pricing. I mean, he was quoted as saying here that tiered pricing would create more consumer choice. These guys, the way they actually use this language is to say that more consumer choice is to have a larger variety of packages from the same company offered to you, not actually competing companies offering better prices, better service, but just Comcast saying you can have this much bandwidth for this price, or this much for this price, or this much for this price. More choice, right? Mm. It's BS.
Well, go on, Alex, sorry.
I was going to say, well, first of all, if he was in a country where broadband actually worked, he wouldn't be able to make this. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know myself and Ewan and a lot of people on the network are on Virgin 100 to 120 bit per second connections, and for the most part they work at that speed. Now, from what I understand by the people that come on the network from the US side, the idea of having something like that is, you know, it's a pipe dream, literally a broadband pipe dream maybe, but it's a pipe dream. So you can make these sort of suggestions because if for some reason this first world country seems to be third world when it comes to providing a service for broadband. You couldn't say something like that here. Because what that would mean is myself and Ewan would have 10 minutes a day of broadband because of it comes through so quickly.
I think one of the stories that we've got this week in the UK press, which you may have or may not have come across in the States, Eric, is there's a firm called, I think they're Axis in Humberside. If I've got that wrong, I apologise to the firm. I've just defamed badly. But they've been slammed by the Ofcom, which is the regulator for broadband here in the UK, because they've had a situation whereby they were misusing a tool within a browser to keep people as a customer and not allow them to jump across. So there's two forms in this country of slamming, which is it's so called, and it's listed on the Ofcom website. So basically you swap someone to a service that they don't want forcibly, or you prevent them from moving to a service that they preferably want. And we are so open in this country that if you're caught even any way trying to do some kind of ring fencing or protection of your customer asset, they can interfere, and they've issued a £30,000 fine, so $45,000 fine against the firm for doing it this week. Now, I mean, that's your wet dream, mate, in the States. It's unbelievable to have that possibility.
But we've been deregulated for, it's got to be 20 years, if not more. I mean, if this was happening in Britain when it was BT, or it weren't even BT, was it? It was the post office, I don't know what they were called. But if this was happening in Britain 25 years ago and the technology was there, we'd be having the same conversations as this gentleman in America. But, you know, we're 20 years ahead by the sounds of it in the way we do business with our communications. I mean, you can buy packages at the very, very, very bottom end of not fast broadband, whatever it's called, ADSL 1 or 2. You can still buy very, very low-end packages which are capped, but are capped just because of you can only afford £10 a month or £5 a month for your broadband. And you're not in a built-up area where you can actually have something that comes off a fibre optic connection originally. So it astounds me, basically, how far behind they are. But it also seems like it's almost like a cartel. They want to stay that far behind because it's the best way of those people generating the most money. I mean, this guy, you know, you're talking about somebody that's, you know, basically a politician that's changing his mind with whoever pays him the biggest money or has got the most chance.
We don't know that.
No, I'm
saying. I'm willing to say that right here. I think that this Shinikowski guy.
No, you're not, because we're in the UK, dude, and that's defamation. And
all right, well, these opinions are.
You wouldn't be surprised to find out, however,
I wouldn't be surprised to find out. I would be shocked if it turned, if a few years from now or whenever he is done with his position there at the FCC, if he is not working for one of these companies that he is supposed to be regulating, I'd be shocked if he isn't.
Now, my point is a politician will change tact if he thought he was going to get elected or more chance of being elected. It's pretty common practice. Now, this guy and other guys like him are on the peripheries of politics. You know, whether it's financial gain or not, it's still politics. And to be surprised that someone might change their mind because of their, it's more advantageous to them or their party or whoever they're representing in the long run is not particularly unusual.
I'd be careful even just saying changing their mind because that implies that they're actually even that they have an opinion that actually matters to them, as opposed to just putting forth the opinions of the lobbyists and the people who are going to be offering them jobs in the near future.
Yeah.
This goes in also to the point I was going to make was he's claiming that it would be better for consumers to have tiered pricing. No. Now, is this just a coincidence that when you look at the earnings statements and the literature to investors from Time Warner and Comcast and Verizon, that they happen to say that tiered pricing would be better for their profit margin and their bottom line? The two can't both be true.
To be fair, they'd know how much they were being humped at that point. So, John, you were I thought you were on mute for a minute, but you've got a point.
No, I was waiting for either Alex or you.
No one breathes on this show, mate.
Yeah. I was going to say that the situation we're talking about here, we're just talking about land-based internet. The situation for mobile in the States is far, far worse and much more corrupt from what I can tell. They have, obviously you guys, you've got a split between CDMA and GSM that you've had been struggling with for years. And now finally you've got to a point where LTE is beginning to roll out, which I'm hugely jealous of. But the difference, I think, when we do finally get LTE is it will hopefully be interoperable, whereas your networks are going out making completely incompatible LTE networks. And you're going to end up with the same situation again in the States that you've got now, where you end up being locked into a carrier. You can't take your phone. Like in this country, I can buy a phone with O2, and tomorrow I can change my mind and put a 3 SIM in it or an Orange SIM in it.
You can force them to unlock it.
Yeah, and force them to unlock it. Whereas in the States, what do I do with my Verizon iPhone that hasn't got a SIM slot? What do I do? You know, what do I do in order to change network there? What's my choice? There isn't any choice. And the only way you can have choice is to either lump it and go on AT&T or T-Mobile and import your own phone from Europe. And that's the only way you can really get a truly unlocked handset in the States, which is crazy. So it's just, the problems are just beginning there. I think when LTE becomes popular, then we'll see more issues there. And I hope that our regulators can get it right over here and have it working the way that our current 3G networks work, where people, you know, you do have choice as a customer and you do have freedom. Yeah. Because in the States, you just don't. It just doesn't happen.
So. Yeah.
Well, there's not a lot we lead the world in, but I really would say where telecommunications are concerned in this country, our choice and the way it's set up, I think we're possibly some of the best in the world. We've got some of the best alternatives in the world.
My only criticism of the way we have it set up here is that we're reliant on one company to provide the backbone for it, which is BT Openreach, and they're barely worth being in existence as far as I'm concerned. I mean,
but that's historical. It will change because physically you can't put in cables everywhere all the time.
They need to sort that out. I think other than that, we're in a pretty good place.
I mean, I remember when Post Office, whoever, and BT had to give it to, I can't even remember what the company was called, whoever it was, all those years ago. It's the only time ever in history in Britain that a major company was told, we're very sorry, but you have to, you've got no choice, you've got to hand over and you've got to rent out at practically a loss. You've got to rent out your own lines to another company because we are going to force you to have a competition. And it's the only time in this whole world, certainly in this country, that a company has basically been told you're going to be, not only are you going to lose your advantage, we're going to demand that you give it away at cost price. That has suited us down to the ground for the last 20 years.
Well, there's a significant gap across the whole of the UK. I mean, Paul Wheatley, the guy that does our gamer show, if you haven't listened to the gamer show yet, you really ought to. It's an extremely good show. We've got an iOS show and a web show coming that Paul hosts as well that are brilliant. They'll be up next week. And he's saying he lives 30 miles from the Scottish capital, Edinburgh, and he gets less than 3 megabits a second. at best. That's as much as he can manage there. We're getting, Alex and I are getting 120, and we're probably at least 100, if not close to 120 most days. Certainly at night time, we'll hit 120, absolutely. And they're talking about Japan. You know, where's Japan in all of this? Japan is getting gigabit to the door. I do some work for a firm who are just about to put gigabit to the door in Saudi Arabia and another, Oman. I think they're doing gigabit to the door in Oman. And 3 or 4 years ago, I remember listening to a podcast with Alex Lindsay dialing in from Rwanda. And they said, oh, you know, we're worried about the connection. And he sat there going, no, I got 50 up and 50 down in a hotel in Rwanda. You know,
brand new network.
Exactly.
Super. Well, and if you wonder why these guys aren't doing more in the government to try to make this better for consumers, I mean, the big telcos, AT&T and Verizon, are some of the biggest funders of both political parties. You can't get elected on the position of opposing them. You just can't. And that's why I'm looking at this Reuters article that you sent. Or actually, it's the original source article to the Engadget article from the show notes. About the President Obama wants to have more government services available, some kind of big mandate or something. He wants them more government services available through mobile phones.
He wants government websites to be available on all devices all the time for anyone that wants them. And I think that's got to be applauded.
Which they
are. Well, not really, though. Not really, because at least the thrust of this article is saying that this is going to be, my interpretation of this, it's going to be a handout to Verizon and AT&T, because this whole article is about how, in order to make this happen, we have to reallocate more spectrum. Verizon needs more spectrum. AT&T needs more spectrum, or else we can't put little text-based websites in phone format.
Well, yeah, every .gov is available.
Yeah, I mean, if you look in the UK, again, I think we're very, very good. If I want to go on the VAT or Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, which is where you pay your sales tax here in the UK, I collect sales tax and I'm a net provider of it, so I have to give money every quarter to the government that I've collected on their behalf. And their website is very accessible from an iPad and an iPhone, and it's functional as well. It's not me sitting there going, holy hell, I can't find anything. It works.
Don't really worry about the cookies, though, haven't you?
Allegedly.
Not again.
I can pay my VAT bill on an iPhone, and it works. It's brilliant. Really, really good. We've got a competition running. If you would like to send us a caption to go along with this picture, then you can win a copy of Camtasia or a copy of Snagit. This is John Boner, who is not pronounced Boner. I got a good kicking off an email this week from someone who said it's not Boner, and he pronounced it properly. And I said, yes, but that word's just too hard to take the piss out of. Boner's far easier. And Tim Cook, and apparently they had a sit down over relaxing tax laws so that Apple can bring more money back into the US, allegedly. No one actually knows. You put some captions to this competition and you could win yourself a copy of Camtasia or Snagit 2 from the fantastic TechSmith. Please, please, please send us an entry in and we'll draw a winner. You've got another week, so we'll draw it on the Mac Show next Friday. That's the closing date. So as long as you've got it in by the Mac Show next Friday, you too could win a copy of Camtasia. Someone in the chat room has just said Tim Cook looks like Paul O'Grady.
That was me.
Which, oh man, yes he does. Holy crap. So there you go. Lily Savage.
And there's a helper for you.
Lily Savage and a boner.
Well, I was about to say, Tim Cook, you could pronounce his name slightly more funnily as well if you wanted.
We've had one entry already that has done that.
I thought he might.
I won't reveal what it is. And it's very good. They've done another payoff line that goes along with it, which is kind of like, oh, well done. So there we go. He's good. We'll pick the best one on the Mac Show next week. There we go. This podcast and lots of others would not be possible without the fantastic and fantabulous UK2.net. They support us like you wouldn't believe. They pick up an enormous amount of bandwidth for all of the shows, and every time people come on, they just say, yeah, no problem. I've got a trip to the Marussia F1 factory next Thursday with them. They said, would you like to come? Because you do an F1 show and you could interview a few people and you can have a drink and you can sit and look at the car, and I've got a fat chance of getting in the car.
Physically?
I used to be a jockey, but not anymore. And no answers, by that way, on that one, chat room, please. Do not add anything to the word jockey. And I will be there. UK Tour sponsors of Marussia, which is why we've got the gig to walk around and have a look. And it's fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope I'm back in time to do the show. If I'm not, well. I'm at the Marussia factory. If you'd like to buy their services, then please go to our website first. If you don't go to the website first, we don't get the kudos of having sent you. So go to britishtechnetwork.com, click on the UK2.net logo, and that will pass you through to their website. And then anything that you buy, when you use the offer codes that are available, we will get the kudos for having sent you, and those you'll get those reductions. You'll get them anyway if you put them in, but if you just put them in anyway, people think, oh well, they've got it from a website, they haven't got it from British Tech Network. So please use the tracking link just to prove, even if you just want to sign into your account, just use that. Use British Tech DNS and you get money off your DNS management charge. It wipes it out of your basket. Use British Tech Domain, and British Tech Domain will get you a 20% off your domain registration. 20%. I've heard of other podcasts that are offering things at the moment with domains, and they get 10%. UK2 are giving you guys 20%. That's a huge, huge amount, and they're not exactly expensive to start with. And then there's lots of others, VPS, VPN. All you have to do is take those things and add them to the back of the words British Tech, and it'll start lowering your basket. You can get up to £50 off a single basket of purchases from them. It's pretty amazing. They really are, you know, good at looking after the loyalty. General customers turn up, they pay one price, you're paying 50 quid less than that for what you've had. Please support UK2 because they support us and we go off the air without them. They really are really good, brilliant. Thank you very much, UK2. We'd be lost without you. Right, did you want to talk about IE10? Because I found that quite interesting. IE10 is going to support Flash, but only on some advanced websites. Or did none of you read that? I mean, John, you being a web man, I thought that might have appealed to you as a story.
Yeah.
Oh, no, or maybe not.
I find it impossible to get excited about anything that has the words IE at the beginning of it. I find their current advertising campaign absolutely hilarious, and I'm really quite annoyed at myself that I really like the song in it, and so I find myself nodding along, and then I have to remind myself that it's advertising IE. IE is responsible for about 50% of the bad things that happened to me in my life. At least. So, to be honest, they can carry on making their little browser, but if you're using IE, you really shouldn't be. So that's my outlook on it. I think what's going to be interesting for them is what they do with it in Windows 8, because they're going to be splitting it. So on tablets, there'll be two versions, just to make it really fun for everybody. They'll have two versions for it. So there's going to be the tablet optimized swipey version that runs in Metro, and then for Windows RT, and other tablet versions, of which don't doubt there'll be 10. There'll be then a full browser version as well, which I guess will be the one that has the Flash support in it for advanced websites only.
Oh, my life. So
it's
going to
be
versions.
Really confusing. So not only do we have 10 different versions of the operating system, and then we're going to have two different versions of the browser that will appear in some of the operating systems, and then suddenly I feel quite smug that I've got a Mac.
Two versions.
Don't have to worry about.
You get the I on one and you get the E on the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go by them separately and join them.
I'm already looking forward to learning how to write CSS for it.
Chat room's gone off on one with it. How would an advanced website use Flash, says Tone. Yeah. Is there an IE song, says DT. And Paul W says, IE, it's off to multiple starsheet hacking we go. Very good.
Maybe that's another web show episode for me and Paul, all about the perils of IE. But there you go.
Tony says two versions that both suck, perhaps. Well done.
Mm. The only time you should use IE is in the middle of a sentence when you're about to give an example after it.
But not after C, absolutely.
Like, for instance, IE, don't use it. That's a good example.
Right. Have we got any cool things? John, do you have a cool... Don't shake your head, Lanigan. You've done so well so far. Don't cock it up now, sunshine. Look around. Look around. Look at your feet. There's got to be a wrapper there somewhere. A boiled sweet. I'll take a boiled sweet. Mr. Hume, what have you got for us, pal?
I've got a really cool thing. I have been looking on jealously to our cousins across the seas in America with their fancy Square card service for some time now, where they can charge money from each other's cards in a land where they're carefree and able to do these things. And we've not been able to do these things until now. We have been saved by the Swedes. And they have brought us this little dongle, which is called the iZettle. And it comes with an iOS app. And you insert it into your iPhone or iPad thus. And now I have a chip and pin reader in my card. So I can now start charging my friends for things. I don't carry cash. And so this is much more convenient for me.
Dude, what on earth do you need to charge your friends for? That's not what friends are for.
I charge people for everything. I like to work. I like to keep myself in credit at all times. So no, it's little things. I sell a lot of my old tech as well. So it's right. Very handy to be able to do it without having to go via eBay or PayPal. So it's very, very good. And it works beautifully. And today saw the release of their 2.0 software, which is very much more stable and very nice. And you can apply to be in the beta on their website at the moment, which is izettle.com. That's izettle.com.
Now, the thing that bothers me, and I'm trying to desperately get a picture here, is that on the website, the picture is a guy buying something on his credit card, and the amount that's on the phone is €245,000.
That's great. If anyone wants to pay that to me, then by all means, I will test that for you to make sure that it's possible.
I'm sure.
Isn't that what a loaf of bread and effins costs these days?
It could be, actually. If you've got 245...
Two more zeros.
If you've got 245 grand over, you're really going to collect it on a frigging iPhone. You're a drug dealer. That picture are two drug dealers.
I'm not a drug dealer.
No, that picture is two drug dealers. This is a device for drug dealers.
It's a good way of laundering money, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's good. I was very pleased to be included in their beta test as well, and I'm enjoying it.
That's the problem. You're here to just gloat that you're in the beta.
It's exclusive, should apply because they're very nice people and they're from Sweden.
You get kudos. Have you done Geek Badge yet?
No.
You've got to do Geek Badge. No. Go to the iTunes store, download Geek Badge, Andy Vaughan application again from Figs, who did the Will Green thing for us. But I got 2.4 this week. That was as high as I could get on Geek Badge. And it's you get to flash your Geek Badge and you get to compare it with other people across the world. And apparently I'm under par because apparently the average is 3. So I'm only 2.4. But you get credit for being a beta tester, a genuine beta tester.
Hardware beta tester as well. I mean, I must get loads of points
for
that.
Yeah, maybe. Take the test. There's 96 questions. It only takes about 5 or 6 minutes to do it. But you get to publish your Geek Badge score and there's kudos.
I'll do it now.
Oh, here we go. Super Chicken saying he got a gold 3.
So in other words, if you don't get more than 2.4, you just don't publish it.
Yeah.
Everything I've ever beta tested has never come to production. So I'm the curse of the beta testers.
Yep, leave it alone, dude. Leave it alone. Mr. Fox, did you have anything for us?
Yeah, well, I did, because I don't know why. I just felt like spending some money this week, and I bought myself a new monitor.
Oh,
right, and it's just, well, the thing is, I was looking and I was thinking, all right, a nice professional monitor for what I do starts about £1,000, and so I'm not going to get a new monitor. And then I looked at the sort of cheapest chip monitors and I thought, well, you know what, I don't need one that badly that I want a piece of crap. But I found and got delivered for the very reasonable price of, it was about £180 plus VAT, a Dell 24-inch. I can't remember because I haven't prepared at all, but it's there's two types of screen. There's the cheap screen, which is one actual way of that, the actual screen itself, the actual LCD is one type. And then you've got the very, very expensive, which is another type of screen. There is a hybrid in between, and this is what this Dell is. Now, the reason I like this Dell, it's actually 1920 by 1200. I think it's 1920x1200, which is the same as the old 24-inch Mac. So it's a 1610 rather than a 169 screen. And these are very, very hard to get hold of.
1920x1080 is the standard.
Exactly. And this gives me that little bit extra that you'll know when you're using Photoshop, the shape makes all the difference. Mm. And this screen, for the price I got, the quality that it is, no, it's not a £1,000 screen, but it's certainly not a £180 screen. If I was going to equate it, I'd say it's probably £500 or £600 worth of screen. If a 1080, normally 180 screen is the old technology and 1,000 is the new. So I'd say this is worth £500 or £600. And at the moment on Amazon, it was 180 plus VAT.
Jolly good, mate. Well done.
So there you go.
It's a good pick. Well done. 180 quid, so 200 plus, just 220, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, so about that.
Hume is taking the geek badge test now, so we'll have to wait and see. If he doesn't outscore me, he won't be declaring his
score. I'm a number 15.
He won't be declaring his score if he hasn't beaten me. I'm no geek, mate. I'm really am a consumer, so. Mr. Lanigan, did you find
my it? Pick is 9x12 clasp envelopes available in a 12 pack from Staples. They have a closing thing up there. It's great for mailing your taxes in or mailing things through FedEx or your local shipping service, and it's made of 20% recycled content, and that's always nice. So clasp envelopes, get them at a store near you.
Now I do believe that clasp is at version 2.
Oh, this clasp is beta, and sometimes it falls off. So I would stick around for actually the 1.0 if you're concerned about reliability.
No, dude, if it falls off, it's alpha.
Mm.
If you're an alpha project, you get far more kudos than a beta project. Absolutely.
And you know, the EULA to agree to how these envelopes can be used is just ridiculous. I mean, you give away all your rights, so use it at your own risk.
Chat room saying another top pick from Eric. So you've won already, mate. Don't even think about it. Alex, the chat room wants to know if they can see your new monitor.
Give me a second and I'll do my pick
while you have a move around, and then we'll do that.
Bloody hell. I could get a mirror, it'd be quicker.
Now, this is going to sound really stupid, but I really promise you that stick with me because it's not. My pick is the 1080p camera on the iPhone 4S, which if you're going to tell me it's 720 and I've cut that up, I'm not going to be disappointed. My little boy has never been great with riding bikes and that kind of stuff. We had him a little tiny bike with stabilizers and all that kind of thing, and he used to push it around, but he never really got into it. And he's hit 9 this year, and we said to him, dude, you can't ride a bike. You need to ride a bike. And he said, well, and he didn't really want to. And then he said, I really want to ride a bike. So we got him a bike at the weekend. He's never had a go at riding a bike properly before. And I took him up to a little hill by near where my parents live. And he learned to ride a bike in 30 minutes this afternoon, which was pretty impressive. But I want to say the iPhone 4S is my pick. And it's because I had something in my pocket that I could shoot 1080p video discreetly so that I didn't put him off. He wasn't feeling like he was under pressure to perform. And I have video of my boy for the very first time. I know he's not doing an awful lot of riding there, but there we go. There we go. That's the first time Ellis has picked his legs up and actually ridden his bike, pedaled it a couple of times. So this afternoon, my boy learnt to ride his bike. And my pick is iPhone 4 because it let me get 1080p video of the event. And I can't think of anything else that's cooler than that. So you can criticise me all you like. Really, I don't care. Question. Stuff you. Yes, mate.
You've been talking to my missus.
No, why?
Today, for the first time, my almost 9-year-old boy learnt to ride a bike.
Dude.
She recorded it on her iPhone 3G or 3GS, whatever, in 720.
Yeah, no, that's crap.
And you know how late I was? I'm waiting to see the video of my son riding his bike for the first time.
Well, I'm sorry that I've made you see my son's first. But
I don't mean that. I just thought, are you two, this is some sort of conspiracy. Have you both decided to teach the kids to ride the bike on exactly the same day?
It's just like, you know, there's the first time my boy's, I've got him going down the slope, and there's the first time he picks his feet up and actually puts them on the pedals. That's just the coolest thing since sliced bread. And I've got one of him cycling past, and I put it on the wall, and I did it really quickly, and I've got the camera on the bottom, not on the top. They've got to sort the EXIF data on this thing. It's crap. Where's greening?
There you go, look. You
Here we go.
Not sure what the difference is. There's an old picture of my two boys.
Right, okay. I think they were more interested in the screen as in the profile. Is it going any further back yet? There we go. So it's got two USB.
Up and down.
Is that right. FireWire or USB?
USB.
Right.
It goes up and down, it goes forward and back. You can move it to any angle you want. It takes...
Does it rotate?
Yeah, that's really cool. Look.
Go portrait.
There you go. Except for, I haven't got it set. There you go, there's portrait.
And it scratches the base.
I haven't turned it on in the computer, but it will auto-rotate the screen when you do it. I'll tell you what, it's a hell of a lot sharper than the Mac screen.
You know what? Chat room says, maybe you and I have the same son. Thank God it wasn't a cliff, says Tone. And DT says, their wife is a bigamist.
There you go.
That'd be funny if you learned it was the same kid. Like both your wives were one of them were not telling the truth.
Right, Humie, what have you got, dude?
Oh, I'm not finished yet. I'm on 59. I was watching the videos. I was getting all
teary.
And it was a beautiful moment we shared together then, I think. It was good.
It was. I got to say, I really enjoyed this afternoon. It was great. And I said to him, you're going to learn to ride a bike, mate. It'll only take you 30 minutes. You'll find it. And he said, no, I can't do it, Dad. I can't do it. And 30 minutes later, the guy's cycling. Use a slope. There you go. That's how to teach kids.
That's such a coincidence, too, because just by coincidence today, I forgot how to ride a bike. So I think it left my mind and entered theirs.
Oh, dear. We'll be back again next week. We'll have a full panel. We won't have had a cock-up because Carl will be back in harness. And this week has proved to me how much Carl does for us. Because if he hadn't, I mean, we'd have had no guests tonight at all, apart from the fact that, you know, we cocked one up. That's not his fault, it's mine. So thank you, Carl. We really appreciate all you do. I know I'm only saying that because I know he can't hear me because he's actually on a plane at the minute now. So, well. Where can we get a hold of you? And John, tell us about the web show while you're on, because you recorded that last night, didn't you? We've got a new show starting next week.
Yes, I need to issue a correction for earlier in the show. Ewan described the web show as being hosted by Paul Wheatley. It's hosted by Paul Wheatley and John Hume.
Ah, sorry.
And will be a bi-weekly podcast starting from as soon as Ewan puts it online this week. And it will be available for your audio pleasure, where this week we had a panel of six. So myself and Paul, Sarah joined us very kindly, and we had Simon from Milk Boss Studios and Marty the Interactive Junkie and Alan as well, whose surname I cannot remember, and someone in chat will help me any second, hopefully. And we had a very interesting debate about app versus web, so you should definitely download that as soon as you can and make your ears a happy place.
And there's Paul's done the iOS show for us with Andy Lee, as well as a couple of other people. And I've listened to the first one of those, and it was good. It started off, and I thought, oh, hang on, be careful. You can't just redo the Mac show, but it doesn't. It gets real geek real quick, and it's good. It's real good.
And Paul's also told me to remind everybody the Gamer Show is also available. So you should definitely get that in your ears too.
Gamer Show, I would say, is, in terms of pace and content, is one of the best shows on the network. I really enjoy listening to it. And I download it now through choice rather than through review. I like listening to it. If you've not given any of those podcasts a review, please go along to iTunes and do it. Same goes for all of the podcasts. We'll read a few out next week because we haven't read any for the last couple of weeks. But please, give us some reviews, because reviews really bump us up in the rankings in iTunes. It makes an enormous difference to us. And lots of people have done the audio, but not a lot of people have done the videos for all of the shows. So whatever you've written for the video, make sure you subscribe to the video and go down and review it. Thanks for so much, please. Does appreciate. Alex, where are you, mate?
I'm at home. I'm on Alex G Fox. No, I'm not. What am I? I need to get my email address out.
No, you don't give out your email address, dude. That's a bad mistake. You give your Twitter address out.
That was so
at funny. Alex G Alex, Frost.
Whatever. I'm at Alex G Fox. And just about the Gamer Show, people that know me know I'm an incredibly boring old fart. And I, the other day, I thought, oh, there's a new podcast. I should listen to it because of what a wonderful network and all the rest of it. I have no interest whatsoever in games. I'll be completely upfront. And I loved the show. It absolutely dragged me in, and I was thinking, you know what, maybe games are a bit more interesting than I thought. They are so enthusiastic, they actually turn me on to something that I've actually always had a real problem with, computer games, and they're infectious. And even if you've got no interest whatsoever, as I have, in games, you've got to listen to it, because of, as I said to you, and once I listened to the first show, that's how podcasts should be done.
It is. I mean, it's a great paced show. It's exactly on the right time for the number of people that are there. And the one feature that they've got that I really love is the cheap game. The cheap game is excellent. I listened to it this week with Cheers and Sam, and the games that Paul gave them to, they had to go away and play it. And it's like, you know, the bargain stands. Paul's got two games that he gives out to them, and they've got to go away and play it and review it. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's wrist-slitting. But I love that feature. Don't stop that feature, Paul. It's perfect. Yeah,
the only thing they've got to realise is we are going to steal every good idea they have.
No.
Yeah. I'm going to start a new podcast. I don't know. It's got to be really boring. I'm going to be as enthusiastic as them, and it's going to be great.
Mr. Lanigan, where are you, pal?
I'm at ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, ericlanigan.
Well done, mate. Thank you very much. Do appreciate you coming along. You got lunch to go to now, I take it.
Yep.
Right, That's it. We'll see you next week. 8 o'clock sharp. Thursday night. Oh, no. Thursday night, yeah. Thursday night. Yeah, no, Thursday night. I'll be back. Definitely. With Marusha gear. I might have a bit to give away as well, so I'd come if I were you. Be in the chat room. There might be a few bags and hats to go away. Did tell you.